Coming up on this week's book show, Elizabeth Brundage's new novel, The Vanishing Point, takes a close look at relationships, the mistakes we make early on that inform our destinies, and the troubling things we sometimes do in the name of love. Elizabeth Brundage on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Elizabeth Brundage's new novel, The Vanishing Point, is a literary mystery about three photographers who meet in an exclusive grad program in Philadelphia, two men and one woman. A love triangle ensues, and the story picks up years later. The novel takes a very close look at relationships, the mistakes we make early on that inform our destinies, and the troubling things we sometimes do in the name of love. Elizabeth Brundage is the author of five novels, including All Things Cease to Appear, which was named a Wall Street Journal Best Book of the Year. Again, the new novel is The Vanishing Point, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Brundage back to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being here. What a great pleasure to have you.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Joe. It's so good to see you.
You are, I should note for listeners that I told you this earlier, but you're our first live in-studio guest in a year and a half, and we're thrilled to have you. It's a great way to get back to whatever normal is.
And I'm totally honored to be here, to be the first, and so happy.
Thrilled. As I mentioned in the introduction about the book being about three photographers, that has much to do with the book, but certainly not the main focus. But what led you to that idea of photography and how you could use it in the writing and the telling of the story?
I think that I was becoming much more interested in my own life in photography. Actually, I got a new iPhone, and that's what started me taking pictures for Instagram. And I've always been really interested in photography and film. That's always just been a constant interest. And so I began to read about photography and kind of study it on my own time seriously and take more and more pictures. And I thought, how interesting to write about the medium, because I think it says so much about who we are, in a sense. On the one hand, photographs convey aspects of who we are as people and human beings in this time period. But also there's a certain amount of trickery involved, because every photograph is somewhat designed by the taker.
The book is told through many vantage points. There are three main characters, and Julian, Magda, and Rye. But there are more characters that tell the story. How did you decide on that format of having these multiple voices in the third person tell the story?
I think a pretty standard way for me to do it. I'm really interested in point of view. That also ties into photography thematically in this novel, that I'm presenting the reader with each character's very intimate, close point of view on how they see the world. And I think that's really interesting to think about how each one of us considers what is their worldview, in a sense, and how do they see things. And that perspective drives the decisions we make. So it either divides us, it brings us together, and these things are extremely important, especially now.
This character of Rye, he's a successful photographer and part of this troika of people who are dealing with their lives and how they overlap. You write in the book, he was the first to admit that his own success had turned him into someone else. His raw vision was gone. Now the camera owned him. It was the camera that decided what and how he saw.
Yes.
That beautifully tells us about that character, because he almost feels robbed.
He does. But he allowed it to happen. You know, in the beginning, there's a certain, I guess for any artist really, there's a certain purity in your vision where you are open to allowing anything to happen, either on the page or in a photograph or in a sculpture, whatever it may be. You're open to it, to whatever's there, and you're not editing, you're not curating it. The novel's also about kind of how we curate our lives on Instagram, on Facebook, all social media. We're curating ourselves to present an aspect of who we are, although it's not the full picture. That's so too with photographs that are taken for the media, of celebrities, of fashion. It's an aspect of who we are, but certainly not the full picture.
You look at that several times in the book where something happens in Rye's life, and you describe the photo that is being used in the media, which is very different from what has just occurred in his life. It's a different view.
A totally different view. I think all three characters are at a certain point in their lives. They've accomplished a great deal, and yet they're still not satisfied. There's something just that fills them with some form of anxiety. And I think that, you know, we live in a very anxious time, and there's a sense of, can you really trust what you've accomplished? Can you trust the things that you see around you that define your life and make you feel happy? Are you really happy? You know, there's all these questions that people sometimes ask. I know I do. You know, what does it really feel like to be completely happy? Or what is a meaningful life? What does that really mean to us? So these are sort of existential questions that I try to entertain in the novel.
Right. What sustains us and what keeps us going?
Yes.
Elizabeth Brundage is our guest. The name of the new novel is The Vanishing Point. I want to talk about the character. Two of the characters have a son. His name is Theo. And you write about him. And there's two things I want to talk about with you about this character. One is that his voice comes in maybe within the first 100 pages or so of the novel. Prior to that, there is no profanity. And then Theo enters the scene and it just lets loose. And I loved it. And I thought to myself, I'm wondering if that was conscious of to keep the narrative free of expletives so that it had such power when it comes.
I have to admit it was not conscious. You know, I think when I started writing Theo, I was just completely in his head. And so whatever came out was just, you know,
a young man.
It's appropriate for his language. We all speak a different language. That's
right.
The other thing I wanted to address with Simone, who's a translator, how she's lost track of her husband's language, in a sense. I think we do that sometimes, whereas even though we're all speaking English, we're not really speaking the same language. It doesn't sound right to us. We don't really recognize each other. And so with Theo, I think that's his voice. You know, that's just completely who he is.
And I thought of it because I remember speaking to Joan Rivers shortly before her passing, and she said that one of the things that she did in her comedy was that when she had an opening act, she didn't let them swear. So that when she came out, it had that power.
Yes.
So that was what went me to that.
Interesting.
The other interesting thing about Theo and what is one of the centers of the story, which is his addiction and dealing with that. With that addiction and coming to terms with it and really taking us through the process of someone who becomes addicted and then parents dealing with it and how you deal with it and how far it brings that person down, but also the entire family and also brings people together. What brought you to that point of wanting to explore that?
Well, a few things led to that. I in my own particular family history, we've dealt with addiction. My brother was addicted to heroin. Also, in other aspects of my family, we were challenged by that. I think that my husband, you know, is a physician here in Albany, mm-hmm. and he would come home and tell me about all the overdoses, you know, that he was seeing and hearing about. And it just became so obvious that this was really a crucial problem in our world, you know, not just here in the United States, but, you know, everywhere. And I wanted to show how this young man who has a certain gentleness about him, a certain vulnerability, as I think so many young people possess, because they're not, they haven't learned how to completely protect themselves or for whatever reason, and how he just tried some heroin one night and how it felt for him and the surprise that, you know, he was okay the next day and that actually it felt great, you know. And so there's that aspect of it that it's not the hardest thing in the world to become addicted to, you right. know. And so that's kind of the trickery of it.
There's a moment in the novel where Theo comes face to face with one of the main characters in the novel, and they have not seen each other, and much has been revealed. And Theo basically puts the needle in his arm as okay, take that.
Right.
Take
yes.
that. And that was so powerful because even he was questioning, well, why did I do that?
Right, right. I think he's saying to Rye at that point
yeah.
that you can't save me, really, you know.
Right.
And he didn't really want to be saved. He was already beyond that point where he wasn't thinking about that this had become kind of his pattern, his routine, his life. And that's what he was focused on at that point. I think, you know, I wouldn't say that I can speak for every person who gets involved with opioids or becomes addicted. I'm not trying to say anything dogmatic. It's just that this is a story about one particular boy who gets caught up in this. He says it just rolled up on him, and
right.
before he knew it, he was consumed by it.
One of the other major characters is Julian, and I'm going to read just a line from the book and ask you about this, less about Julian specifically and more about work in general. But Julian's talking about also a photographer, as I mentioned in the introduction, who didn't make portraits. He didn't like people in his shots. You write, his images, he felt, were pure, almost religious. Not that he was or ever had been at all religious. In fact, for all intents and purposes, he was agnostic. But uncannily, he believed there was an aspect of God in his work. He didn't know why this was. It certainly wasn't deserved. Do you feel that way?
I do feel that way sometimes. I think, especially in photography, the trick of light can create this ephemeral mystery, I think, and you wonder about it. You know, I think it's so personal. Everyone has their own thoughts about God.
Right.
And God is in our language. That word is in our language. And it's a special word, and people think about it. And they think about it at home when they're alone. So I think I wanted to address that. You know, we use the word a lot. Oh, God help us, or,
right.
oh, thank God, you know, this happened. Oh, my God, I can't believe it. But so, you know, God is definitely very deeply knitted into our language.
Because it also said to me, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but that there was a point where you look at the work and think, at some point that to have done what you've done, there had to have been some sort of divine intervention.
Oh, yes.
To create the world that you did.
Totally, yeah. So true. Oh, my God, so true, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, writing is very tough for me.
Right.
And I'm trying to write about subjects that I don't think are so easy to consider. And I think that it's good that we have mystery in our lives. I don't really write mysteries, I don't think. I write about mystery in our lives. I think that's much more of what I'm interested in. Things that are unexplained and the things that keep us going also, you know. So everyone has a sense of spirituality, I believe. It doesn't mean that you necessarily believe in religion.
Right.
So.
When you are writing these characters, and were you impacted by the pandemic at all as far as the writing of differing your routine?
Luckily, I had finished the novel, and I was just working on revisions. But I did find it difficult because there was so much going on at that time. You know, there was the election, first of all, which was fraught, and then there was this COVID ordeal, which was, you know, I think changed a lot of us. We started thinking about things on a deeper level, in a sense of the things that really are meaningful to us. And I think that filtered into the novel, definitely.
Talk to me about the title, The Vanishing Point. It is a photography term, but it also says a lot about the novel itself.
Yeah. The Vanishing Point, we had so many titles that we were considering. It started with a discrete parcel of time, which was a part of a phrase by John Sarkowski, who was at one time the curator at MoMA, the photography curator, and mm-hmm. he was just an essential voice in photography and creating photography in the United States, especially. And so I wanted to kind of say with the title that this is a story about a period of time in these characters' lives that does not necessarily define them. So in Theo's case, the fact that he's doing heroin at this point in his life, it doesn't mean that he will be doing it forever. It's a period of time, you know, and he learns from it. He learns from the experience greatly, and he finds his own strength within that healing, you know what I'm saying? And so also, he vanishes, though, for a while, and so does Rye. Rye vanishes, and so does Magda, in a way. She vanishes in the lie of her life for 20 years. She vanishes. So how do we vanish, kind of, in our lives in plain sight? We lose track of who we are.
Which is fascinating within the novel, because you use this imagery often of there is a packet of photos that come in the mail, and it brings us to a different time, brings the characters to a different time, and they relate to that. There is a picture of Theo and realizing, okay, that I don't even recognize
right, yes.
that person. I have to look at this closely. And that was really interesting to me as well.
I'm so glad that you say that. Thank you for recognizing that. It's true, actually. I mean, I needed that for strategically. I needed to show that through the other characters' points of view when they're evaluating Theo when he was little and then he's grown up. But it's a way of also reflecting on how we change and who we've the ground we've covered, sort of, as we mature and get older. And who we were back in the beginning, you know, and then how we life sort of chips away at us. It's difficult. We start to lose pieces of ourselves, in a sense. Maybe, I mean, I'm sounding kind of grim, and I don't mean to be, but I do think that you have to really, you know, keep pushing forward
right.
to find yourself and refine yourself. So when Magda is in that hotel room with Rye, she's finding that piece of herself that she lost. But it's also very disruptive in a sense, because he doesn't fit in her life now. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So when Magda then goes and connects with Theo, and there's a line in the book where he is working on his addiction, and Magna says she resents the term recover, she resents the term clean, because in life, if you are living it fully, you are always a little dirty.
Yeah. Yes,
it's man, true. That's true. Yes, right? That is true.
Yeah.
And again, it almost, not to diminish the great sorrow and horror of the addiction, but it does also say that, yes, you have this issue, but we all have these dirty issues that
That's
we're dealing
right.
with.
That's right. Yeah, definitely.
I don't think we talked specifically about Magna as a character, but she is different than the others. And I'm curious as how you came to her and telling that story. And she is of Polish descent.
Yes.
And giving her that backstory.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I probably saw a photograph of a woman, basically. I don't remember really how she came to me, but why she's Polish. I don't know why that either. You know, sometimes these characters really, they show up and they're interesting and they have a story to tell. I think she's different because, first of all, she's female. She did come from... her parents were immigrants to this country. I wanted to write about that, how important that is. She just seemed like somebody who had a definitive vision, in a sense, that was not recognized early on. I mean, Brodsky, the guy at the graduate program, recognizes something in her eye. And she talks about the eye, how important it is. And that's basically what she has. She doesn't have any fancy equipment or anything like that. But she also knows that as a woman, it's going to be much harder for her. And it is harder for her. And then circumstances happen in her life that make it even that much harder. So there are things that became more important than her work. And she had to put her work on hold. And she had to make decisions to keep going. Practical decisions.
Elizabeth Brundage is our guest. The name of the novel is The Vanishing Point. There are a few scenes, but one in particular that is just gasp-inducing and is really horrific for one of the characters, and somewhat surprising behavior by one of the other characters. That's a gut punch. And I ask you not to out that moment, of course, but to talk about how you come to those of what is, in your mind, maybe going too far and not far enough.
I think that we all sort of make bargains with each other in relationships.
Yeah.
We get things, but we give things up. I don't think anybody, maybe I'm wrong, but there's no perfect scenario in terms of a marriage or a close relationship, a partnership. There's no perfect scenario. I mean, everybody has to compromise a bit. For Magda, she compromises for the safety of her child and for her own stability. It seems like an old-fashioned conceit in a sense, but it really isn't. Even today, I think, you know, you have to think about moving forward, and this is the decision she makes, and she ends up being with a man who's successful at what he does, but he doesn't fully see her and doesn't want to see her. And in that, there's a kind of violence in that can erupt. I'll only say that because I don't want to give too much away, but I think that's the best way to talk about him with her, that he doesn't fully see her. And he's never really done so. The real her.
It's interesting, too, because this, as I said in the introduction, there's this really love triangle. So they're going back to a time where they thought they all knew each other and then realize how little they really do. In the conclusion, and I won't say whether it has a happy ending or a sad ending, or but it is sort of a dot, dot, dot. And that seems fairly perfect for these characters. You've left them in an okay place, though.
Right, definitely. Yeah. It's an okay place. It's a place from which to build where they can move on. They can, all three of them, move on. Even Julian moves on, in a sense. In a creepy, kind of creepy way, but he does figure out how he can move forward after being so obsessed with Rye. And it was really interesting in talking about professional competition,
right,
among artists, and how, you know, for Julian it becomes untenable. He can't accept the fact that he hasn't achieved what Rye achieves, and so it becomes a form of obsession.
We learn that this has been bubbling for a long time.
Yes.
And now you see the depths of it.
That's right. Since they were roommates, it began.
Right.
And this kind of confusion in Julian's persona, you know, that he was confused by it, that what was he lacking, in a sense? And their photography is actually very different. Rye does portraits, and he photographs in color, whereas Julian mostly takes pictures of landscapes and empty places, empty buildings, skies,
right,
and mostly in black and white. And so they're very different photographers. But those visions, those particular visions, are also defining who they are and how they see.
This is just a terrific novel, and so much. It is fun. It's fun to read.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad, because it should be fun.
And you also, yes, absolutely, you should enjoy yourself in reading it. Real quick, there are wonderful quotes in here about photography.
Yeah.
How did you find those?
Just studying photography, you know, Richard Avedon, Katie Grannon, there are so many in there. And just really had fun researching different photographers and how they see their work and how they talk about their work. Annie Leibovitz, her book was fabulous. There's so many.
Susan Sontag is in here.
Yeah, Sontag. And so many. I read a lot of theory. It's all kind of in there.
All the good stuff.
It really helped me to shape the characters and to bring some sort of authenticity, I hope, to who they are.
Absolutely.
To capture.
And you have
that profession.
These quotes that start up the various sections of the book, which are really striking. The name of the new novel is The Vanishing Point. It is published by Little Brown. Elizabeth Brundage, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you so much for being with us. What a great delight.
I so enjoyed our conversation. Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Thank you very much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.